What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about Wizards legend John Wall calling it a career. Yes, John Wall announced his retirement on Tuesday after a 11-year career that spanned nine played seasons in Washington, D.C., spent a year with Houston and a year with the Clippers before being out of the league the last couple of seasons. Certainly want to dive into the career of John because he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Wizards of all time. And I'm saying Wizards and not Bullets. I'm not talking about Elvin Hayes or Wes Unseld, legendary Bullets. I'm talking strictly Wizards, and I'll dive into that in a bit. But certainly, you know, one of the best players, for Washington over the last couple of decades. Brought the Wizards and DC really back into the fold, into the NBA contention for a team that really was dormant for a while. So shout out to John. Congrats to him on an incredible career. And I want to dive into that in the beginning of this episode, but I also want to touch on the SAR going 11 in the redraft. I know I'm a bit late to that, but I definitely have some thoughts on that whole situation. The Wizards signed a few players. Schedule came out from the last time. It's been a bit. I'm kind of taking a little bit of a hiatus. I did a lot this summer with the pod, so definitely wanted to take it easy while the NBA and Wizards news was also kind of taking a break. But that's kind of the show we have for you today. Maybe some Eurobasket stuff if we have time at the end. But, you know, I want to talk first about John Wall. Like I said at the top of the show, announced on his Instagram and Twitter as well that he is retiring from the NBA after 11 seasons. He spent nine seasons in D.C., technically 10, but only played nine. He missed that whole final season before he got traded with that Achilles injury. But I'll just say this about John. Like, drafted number one overall in 2010, this franchise really needed something, needed some spark. And you had the Gilbert years, but at that point, he was kind of, you know, on his way out of Washington, and you certainly didn't have any of the buzz from those good years with Gil and Anton and you know, Brendan Haywood and all those guys. You were kind of moving on to a new era, and John kind of bridged that gap. And he came on, he was really good his rookie year. Would have won Rookie of the Year if not for Blake Griffin sitting out his actual rookie year and then coming on and having an unreal first year in the league. But John made all rookie first team in that year. Then he went on to be a five-time All-Star, made All-NBA third team in 2017, his best season in D.C., where he averaged 23 points, nearly 11 assists, and two steals. He actually finished seventh in MVP voting, tied with Giannis that year, which I thought was pretty fascinating. Made an All-Defense second team. So, you know, a very decorated player in terms of those types of accolades, in terms of Wizards history, played 573 games over those nine seasons. Would have been a lot more, obviously, without those injuries. Franchise leader in steals with 976. He also leads the franchise in career assists. He's up there in the top five of points. He has 10,000 plus points. I believe he's third behind Brad and is it Wes, or I think it's Elvin Hayes actually who leads them. But nonetheless, you know, John has a very decorated career. And that brings me, you know, I saw obviously all the praise for John was warranted. And it wasn't just like a, you know, Wizards Twitter. It was kind of spanning across the league. I mean, the respect he had when he was on and in his prime, he was the fastest player I've ever seen with the ball. I know De'Aaron Fox is kind of the fastest player now in the NBA, but John, man, just a blur with the ball. Like in the open court, a couple memorable plays I remember is in that Hawks series. I believe it was game three. The Wizards were getting killed in 2017, and he takes it coast to coast behind the back and just yams on someone. One of the most impressive plays. You had to play against OKC, I don't know if it's 2015 or 16. Where he was 2-on-1 with Otto and went between the legs, bounced past Otto for the dunk, gave the Wizards a huge lead in that game. You obviously have the 360 layups. The Christmas Day game against the Knicks where he originally pulled it out, I was actually there with my brother and my dad. That was an insane play. He had one against the Clippers. You know, so offensively, a blur. You knew, like, when, you know, LeBron has the move where he looks down at the ball and you know he's about to shoot it. John had one where he kind of had it in, like, his right hand and looked down or looked at the screen, and you knew he was cutting that right back with a quick cross, you know, burst to the lane, driving, finishing strong. That was kind of the move that he created. Came into the league as a guy that people didn't think would be able to add a shot or shoot the ball. That was the big knock on him. And he added it, that mid-range off the pick and roll with Marcin. You know, we kind of had that down pat and was able to use that to his ability to get down lane when you know, guys started respecting him. One of the best pick and roll players I've seen in my life. I mean, you got Chris Paul, who's up there. You got a bunch of other really good point guards. But John in that pick and roll, man, him and Marcin, just dominant, especially in the later days when they build that rapport and chemistry. Just some of the passes that one in game, I believe it was game six against Boston in 2017, one of those home games where he just had the most insane no look dime to Marcin in the pick and roll for the layup. You know, just had so many incredible passes, so many highlight reel plays. That first game against the Sixers, I believe 2018, where he just absolutely yammed on TJ McConnell. He had some big time dunks. That one against Toronto, it was in game three or four of that 2018 first round series, where he had that big time dunk. You know, so many just highlight reel plays throughout John's career. And obviously the number one was game six, 2017 against Boston. Season on the line with 10 seconds left, Wizards down 91-89 after they got, you know, completely effed over with that BS Horford bank shot from the baseline to give the Celtics a lead. Play was to Beal off a flare screen, didn't get it to him. John got the ball, you know, Porter can't find anybody, gets it to Wall, working against Bradley for three. John Wall, like, it, I can hear it replaying in my head. You know, Hubie Brown was on the call, Mark Jones as well. Just an iconic shot, rising up, season on the line against a really good defender in Bradley. The confidence to just, you know, for a really not that great three-point shooter, to have the confidence to be like, yeah, I'm him. Like, I'm going to rise up and I'm going to make it. And he did. That's the loudest I've ever seen Capital One Arena at the time. I think it was Verizon Center. But just an insane shot, really, really culminated all the hard work and effort that John had put in throughout his career. You know, the Wizards lost that series. You know, that was unfortunate. You had, you know, Scott Brooks not playing Kelly Oubre in game seven. That was certainly a choice. Kelly Olynyk obviously couldn't miss. That was an anomaly, but also unlucky. You know, a lot of things went against them in that series. IT couldn't miss with that 53 points, you know, when the Wizards looked like they were about to maybe steal a game on the road. Just a really tough series, and they lost it. But I thought John did everything he could. I thought that shot was just iconic. Got up on the scorer's table, was pointing down, saying, you know, this is my city. This is where I kind of built it up. And he brought the Wizards back into relevancy, brought basketball back to a town that was really craving it. And so, you know, just a legendary Wizards career, legendary NBA career. Now, I don't think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think injuries derailed that. He had, you know, missed 41 games in the 2017-18 season with that left knee injury, played the playoffs and came back. But that next year, nagging injuries in 18-19, obviously has that surgery on the heel for those bone spurs. And then a month later, like, slips in the shower, slips and tears that Achilles. He's out the rest of that season and the following season. And then just when you think maybe, you know, he'll be back, they trade him to Houston. And that's a whole nother thing. Obviously, you know, I was personally excited to see John and Brad run it back. I knew it wouldn't be the same, but, you know, part of me just wanted one more shot. I'm sure Wizards fans too. And I don't know if you want to say he got robbed of that, because, like, they made the decision to trade John. It was a bad contract, but you also got a bad contract in return in Russ and gave up a protected first that you've still been, you know, it's still in play today. It's a top eight protected pick next year. And then finally, if that doesn't convey, it's 2 seconds. But they decided to make that move. And, you know, John goes on to play okay in Houston, still dealing with injuries, out of the league the next year. Returns, plays a year for the Clippers. He had a great game when he returned to the Wizards. Didn't do too much beyond that year. And then obviously was out of the league the last couple of years. So Definitely wanted to open the show with that. And look, it should not be a debate. Okay, like John Wall deserves to have his jersey retired in DC. He had an interview with the Washington Post that came out today when he retired, and he basically said, "Look, I think I've done enough. I think I've done everything I can to get my jersey up there. I think I should be there." You know, he said it would be great for, you know, him and his family to be able to experience that back in DC. He also basically said, like, look, I think it, and I think the fans would be disappointed if it wasn't in the Raptors, and rightfully so. And I think he's right. You know, enough time has passed to where, you know, I think in the near future the Wizards should come out and say that they're retiring the number two jersey. It doesn't have to be this year, but maybe next year. Have that ceremony so John can get his flowers back in DC. Look, this is a franchise. The bar is pretty low, and we were talking about Bradley Beal's jersey retirement possibilities a little bit over a month ago when I tweeted something out. People were really against that. I'm sure there will be some people who have reservations about Wall having his jersey retired. You know, never made a conference final, obviously never won the NBA Finals or even made it to the NBA Finals with the Wizards. I get that, but sometimes, you know, championships and that type of success can't determine whether or not a player had a tremendous career for that franchise. And so I think it should be pretty clear that John gets that number two retired. I think he knows it. I think Wizards fans know it. And I hope Ted Leonsis and the Wizards brass know it as well, because it's the right decision. He's the best Wizard of all time. And I understand some people will go with Gilbert Arenas there. Like, sure. But I just think the longevity of Wall, you know, from the get-go, right when he got in the league, was drafted by this team too, which I think certainly helps his case. You know, Wizard through and through, number one pick, exceeded expectations, led this team to the playoffs four times, won three series, was really close to getting to that first conference final since 78. And that's another thing. Like, the team hasn't even made a conference final since they won the year, since, what, 78 or 79? So, like, it's not like you can really compare him to many other players over the last couple of decades, because they haven't made it there either. I just think his body of work, off the court too, the John Wall Family Foundation, Turkey Drives, did a lot during 2020, during the pandemic, for social justice. You know, certainly did so much off the court as well for the community. Just think that would be pretty much malpractice for this organization to not retire the number two. Bradley Beal, it's a whole different discussion. Gilbert Arenas is a whole separate discussion. I don't think there should be any discussion. I think John Wall deserves his jersey retired in D.C., and I'm looking forward to the day that happens and he gets his flowers back home. So, you know, shout out to John. Enjoy your retirement on a really good career, both on and off the court. So really happy for John. He's going to be starting at Amazon Prime for their NBA coverage as an analyst. So, I liked what he did on NBA TV. If you saw any of his spots there, really knows the game, obviously. Really smart player, as you knew from his Wizards days. So I'm excited for John in this next chapter, and congrats him on his retirement. That brings me to the second part of this pod, which is the Athletics 2024 NBA draft redraft, which, number one, I'll start with this. I think it's ridiculous to do a redraft this early, like after 1 year sample size. I get it, like, there, it's the media. I'm in the media too. Like, I understand that sometimes, like, you need content, especially in this off season where, you know, late July after summer league and throughout all of August and most of September, you got nothing to do. Not much is happening. And so I don't blame the Athletic for writing this story. I just think it's kind of a ridiculous exercise to do redrafts after just 1 year, especially with so much upside. And potential still there for a lot of these guys, but I understand they have a job to do as somebody, you know, in that job too. But if you missed it, the Wizards had three guys in that redraft, obviously, three notable guys. Alex Saar went number 11, which is crazy. Keyshawn George went number 13, and Bob Carrington went number 16. So I'll read you off who they have in front of Saar, and then I will break it down for you. So they had in order, Stephon Castle, Zachary Richache, Jared McCain, Reed Shepard, Donovan Klingon, Matas Buzelis, Ron Holland, Zach Edey, Jalen Wells, and Kalel Ware. Now, look, I'm not going to say Sarr should have gone two like he did that year. Like, if you're actually doing a redraft, I wouldn't even have Sarr probably in the top three or four. I'd have him at five or six. That doesn't mean if I'm the Wizards, I wouldn't still draft Sarr at two. Like, they took him for his two-way upside, his shooting ability, his rim protection, his defensive versatility. The upside, obviously, at just 19. Like, these are all in place still. Like I said, it's been only a year since he made all-rookie team. So, again, I think all-rookie first team. So, look, I certainly understand moving him down a little bit, but not outside the top 10. I think that's ridiculous. You know, you can look at his numbers and say, yeah, sub 40% from the field for a 7-footer is ridiculous. Only 31% from three is not good for a guy that takes a lot of threes. But I still really liked his rim protection. I still really liked individual games he had, you know, dropping 30-plus in Denver. Had a much stronger second half of the season than first half. And he's still 19 years old. Like, that's, well, I think he's 20 now, but like, that's the thing. It's so hard to evaluate these guys now. And that's kind of what the redraft is doing after just a year. But I like what I saw from Sarr. I certainly don't think that he should have been outside the top 10. I mean, like, the thing is, like, Reed Sheppard, right? I really liked Reed Sheppard coming out of the draft. And I think he just didn't play enough in Houston. But nonetheless, like, Reed Sheppard, you know, it's not like in those limited minutes he popped off. It's not like Reed Sheppard deserves, again, to be going in the top five of a redraft. Not to say that I wouldn't take him, but to say this, like, if you're really going to look at Sarr and knock him for what you saw from him just because he played big minutes on a bad team and Reed Sheppard played no minutes on a good team, that's why, again, it's a bad exercise to partake in. Because, look, for all the upside, like, Reed Sheppard played 52 games, 12 minutes a game. He shot 35% from the field, 34% from three, averaged 4 points and one assist, nearly a turnover per game. Like, what are we doing with that information and Sarr's information and say, you know what, we're only going to move Reed Sheppard back one pick, but Sarr back nine because he played a lot more. Like, Reed Sheppard also shot worse from the field than Sarr, barely shot better from three than Sarr, played a lot less than Sarr. It's just the production wasn't really there for Reed, and in times it was there for Sarr on both ends. And so that's where I really fail to see, like, how this exercise makes sense. If you're keeping Reed Sheppard there, you're saying, you know what, I still buy the upside. I just don't think I saw enough from him. And then for Sarr, you're saying, you know what? I saw plenty. I saw plenty in those minutes to say he's not going to be a top 10 player in this draft and I wouldn't take him in the top 10 again. Like, that's really, we're going that far as to say we saw this guy play big minutes on a bad team in 1 year and we're already moving him down nine spots. But Reed Sheppard, you know what? I didn't really see much in the stats and you didn't shoot the ball particularly well. But I don't care because, you know, you didn't play as much as Alex Sarr did. And I still buy your upside. I just don't buy his upside. I don't buy that he can get better. But I buy that in big minutes you can get better. Like, that's what Sam's saying. And that's his opinion. Like, clearly Sam is not as high on Alex Sarr as others. And that's fine. Like, I'm not attacking Sam or his credibility. I'm just saying, like, it's pretty crazy to say that. And look, if Sam proves me wrong, then sure, good for Sam. But I think it's crazy to have Alex Sarr outside the top 10. I mean, again, if you're redrafting, you know, Stephon Castle had a great rookie season in a perfect role for him in San Antonio. If you ask the Wizards now, if you could do it again, would you draft Sarr? Would you draft Castle? I still think they would draft Alex Sarr. I think if you ask Will Dawkins, he'd still draft Alex Sarr. And so I think It's a weird exercise, certainly. But if it were me, like, I'd have Castle above him. I thought Castle did, you know, rookie of the year was tremendous, but he also didn't shoot the ball well either. Reese Hoshea, I think, was a little bit better than Sarr. Certainly more efficient on the offensive end than Sarr. So I get that. McCain was on an insane shooting and scoring run for the Sixers before he got hurt. So I do understand that. Small sample size, but he was tremendous in those minutes. Again, you can't tell me that if the Wizards could do it again, they'd take McCain over Sarr. They just wouldn't based on upside and all that type of stuff. But I can't fault McCain. He had a better rookie year than Saar, certainly. And then you look at number four, Reed Sheppard. I think that's ridiculous. Klingon, again, I thought he was pretty solid. But again, it's not like he was so good to be six spots ahead of Saar. Don't get that. Buzelis had a good second half of the season. Wasn't tremendous in the first half. Ron Holland is absurd. Again, Ron Holland struggled the same Alex Saar struggled. Really struggled shooting the ball, being efficient on offense. Thought he was a good defender, but certainly not that much better than Saar to be like, hey, take him four spots ahead. He's also on a way better team, way better defensive team. So take that for what it is. Edie and Wells, I get those a little more just because they were really solid, especially Wells. Like, I thought he could have won Rookie of the Year. So, like, those I'm not too mad about. And Kalel Ware as well. Like, I thought Kalel Ware was a very solid, underrated rookie. So, look, like, there's a lot of guys I think putting at a Saar makes sense. I don't know if I would also do it, but I think if you had Saar at 7 or 8, like, I could understand that. But putting him all the way outside the top 10, I think, is a little bit of a stretch. There was also a debate on Twitter. If you follow Brett Usher, he posts a bunch of basketball highlights and stuff. He's a great follow, Wizards fan, and he basically called Sam out for clickbait, and then Sam kind of came back and said it's ridiculous that you would say a clickbait. They resolved it all, but this whole thing did blow up because there are a lot of Wizards fans too that kind of thought it was crazy to think that Alex Saar would be outside the top 10. And then some analysts said that they agreed with what Sam was saying for Saar. So look, it goes both ways. Sam's entitled to his opinion, but at the same time, so am I. And I have this podcast and platform, and I'm going to voice my opinion. I think moving Saar back a little bit would have made sense, but outside the top 10, I think is a little bit too far. Then you got George at 13, Bubba at 16. I think those are honestly not that bad. I think they're pretty fair assessments of them. So again, I didn't hate the entire article. I thought Saar's moved down a little bit. Moving forward, a little bit of Wizards news to break it up. They did make a pair of signings on Tuesday. Per Chris Haynes, the Wizards signed guard Alondis Williams and forward Scal Labissiere to contracts. Again, Chris did not further report or specify which type of contracts. Now, I do know the Wizards have an open two-way spot after they waived Jalen Martin. Tristan Vukcevic, Jameer Watkins are the two guys on two-ways. So they could put Alondis Williams on it. I don't know if he was on a two-way with Miami last year, but he was pretty solid in for them in the G League. Averaged 18 points and 6 assists. Was really good for Wake Forest in the ACC, if I remember him from a few years ago there. The Go-Go actually traded for him. If you don't know, the Go-Go is the Wizards G League affiliate. They acquired him in a trade in early July. And so, these contracts with Labissiere and Williams could just be Exhibit 10s. I'm pretty sure you get a $75,000 signing bonus if you sign an Exhibit 10 with that team before signing with their G League affiliate. Or if you sign an Exhibit 10 and then from that, sign with the G League affiliate, you get a little bit of a bonus. So maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're not two-way guys. They're just training camp bodies on those Exhibit 10s who will eventually play with the Go-Go this season. We've seen that in the past, and maybe that's the case here. Labissiere has been around for a minute. He's 29 years old. Was pretty productive last year for he was on the Stockton Kings last year in the G League, averaged 16-8. He spent summer league with Orlando, which is crazy. He's 29 in summer league, he's still going. He's still trying. He was, get this, right? Scal Labissiere was selected with the 28th overall pick in the 2015 NBA draft out of Kentucky. For reference, the Wizards drafted Kelly Oubre Jr. in that same draft. I mean, that's pretty crazy to think that. He's still going. I honestly respect it. Like, a lot of these guys would have said, I'm going overseas or, I'm calling it quits. But Labissiere's really been working to get himself back in the league. He's been pretty productive in the G League. It doesn't mean he's going to transition into the NBA at any point. It could. But I do think if you had to ask me why Washington made these moves, it would probably be for Exhibit 10s and possibly, two-way contract or G League contract with the Go-Go at some point. So that is those signings via Chris Haynes' reporting. Moving forward to the fourth part of this pod, and that's the Wizards schedule. Came out last Thursday, so I'm a bit late to the party again, but that's okay because the schedule hasn't changed, just the date of the week. There's a couple of key dates on this schedule. Obviously, the first one being the season opener on the road on October 22nd against the Milwaukee Bucks. That is probably going to be a blowout loss, and that's just, you know, it is what it is. Milwaukee, it's not like they're, you know, a title contender, but they have Giannis. They signed Miles Turner. They made some other, you know, in the margin signings. Obviously, it's Washington facing their former forward and Kyle Kuzma, AJ Johnson back in Milwaukee. I don't know if that's, I think it's actually for the first time since the trade. Now, I don't think he'll play at all, but that's the opener. You know, Washington will likely start 0-1. After that, they'll move on to another road game at Dallas. It's probably a loss too. Now, they don't have Kyrie, but they'll have a healthy Anthony Davis. That'll be Cooper Flagg as well. They still have Gafford. They have D'Angelo Russell. Like, they're a good squad. So that's probably 0-2. And then another key date there is the 26th of October. The Wizards will return to Washington for their home opener against the Charlotte Hornets. You've seen the Twitter beef between the Hornets and Wizards fans, so I'm sure that'll be a big rivalry game. Not like on the court, really, but on Twitter. I think it'll be a pretty big rivalry game, which, you know, Wizards fans need, honestly, in a season that's probably going to be another losing one. Well, definitely a losing one, but a bad losing one. That could be a little bit of fun. They play them four times throughout the season, so we'll see how that goes. Some other key dates: January 9th, Jordan Poole and the Pelicans return to DC. Now, will he get a tribute? That's actually an interesting thing to think about. Like, he only spent 2 years. He was the best player those 2 years, but he only spent 2 years in DC, two seasons in DC, before they traded him. This organization, I don't even think they gave Denny a tribute video. And now they didn't draft him, they traded him. But I'm curious actually to see if they do. I feel like I would lean 51% that they do, just because, you know, he was kind of like their franchise guy, at least for those 2 years, their top, you know, star, I guess. Star sounds weird on teams that didn't win 20 games, but still star, best player. So maybe they give him a tribute. I don't know, but that'll certainly be a game I think a lot of fans circle. And then you also got March 20th. That's the Lakers and LeBron James coming to DC. Maybe it's LeBron's last game in DC. Maybe not. I don't know if he's going to do a farewell tour or if he's retiring. And you never know. Maybe the Lakers face the Wizards in the NBA Finals this year. I'm kidding. Maybe not. But that would be the only other way LeBron and the Lakers could come back to Washington. That's another game. I mean, it's going to be like 75% Lakers fans. It always is. So, you know, take that for what it is. It's probably going to be another blowout like it's been the last couple of years. Take that for what it is too. But nonetheless, that's kind of the way I kind of see some big games. The Wizards do have two national TV games this year. They had zero all of last year. They're on Prime Video against the Milwaukee Bucks and then Peacock versus the Detroit Pistons. Again, are those really national TV games? I don't know. Like, they're streaming services that you have to pay for. It's not like it's on cable. It's not like it's on, even if you have YouTube TV, you don't get it. You know, it's not on ESPN or TNT or ABC. It's on Peacock, which you need a subscription for. It's on Prime Video, which I believe you need a subscription for. So I honestly don't consider those national TV. Like, I feel like everybody should be able to watch. It's the same with the NFL doing like Christmas Day games on Netflix, Thursday night being on Prime. You know, it sucks, honestly, for the sport. It sucks for the fans that want to watch the games. And the worst part is that it's blacked out. Like, you pay all this money for NBA League Pass, and just because it's on another streaming service, it's blacked out. Like, I'm 99% sure that's how it is for ESPN and TNT games, at least. So I would assume it's the same. Like, even if you have League Pass, you pay hundreds of dollars for it. Just because another streaming service has the rights to that game, you have to buy another streaming service to just watch that game. So I mean, that sucks inherently. Honestly, I'd rather them just not play those games on Prime Video or on Peacock. Just like don't give them those games, and then you can watch it wherever. It don't want to be blacked out if you have like Monumental, because that's in, you know, local area. At least I don't think. But at the same time, like those are their two technically quote unquote national TV games, which I don't really think count, but nonetheless. And that's kind of some of the key parts of their schedule. You know, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how they start the season. It's a tough, and this is, I'll say this, like it's a tough schedule because they're the worst or one of the worst teams in the league. Again, if like a team like I'm blanking, like the Thunder had the Wizards opening schedule, you'd be like, oh, that's not that bad, honestly. Because it's the Thunder, and they really look down on pretty much most opponents, and then they can beat most opponents. But I think for most teams, they'd even consider it a daunting schedule. Certainly for a team like the Wizards that is expected to be pretty bad, it's a daunting schedule. The first 10 games, at Milwaukee, at Dallas, versus Charlotte, versus Philadelphia, at OKC. That's the first five. I think all of those road games will be losses. Charlotte, I think they can win, but again, Charlotte's not a bad team. I don't think like they were in the last couple of years. They're not a contender, but you know, they got LaMelo healthy. I would assume LaMelo and Brandon Miller. They obviously brought in some other veterans throughout the offseason to help out. You know, they certainly have the talent to be able to compete. Miles Bridges as well, which again, that's a whole nother discussion as to why he's still in the league or a team still employs him. But, you know, they have a decent team. So that's not a rollover or pushover like it has been in the past. And so I would assume, let's just say for like the Wizards' sake and like the sanity of the fan base, that's a win. You got Philadelphia the next night. And like, I know they were bad last year, but McCain's back healthy. I think PG, I would assume, is healthy for this game. And I don't even know what the deal is with Embiid, but like maybe he's back. They still have Maxey. They still have Edgecombe, obviously, and they still have a good team. So I think, you know, disregarding last year, the Wizards probably lose that game. And then obviously they lose at OKC. That puts them at either 1-4, 0-5. A home against Orlando, again, they're really good. I know they swept the Wizards last year and probably the year before. That's probably a loss. At New York, loss. At Boston, I know they're down. But they still have Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. They're still a good team. So, again, I think that's probably a loss. Home against Cleveland, loss. Home against Dallas, probably a loss. And so you're looking at like probably 1-9, 0-10 maybe. At best, maybe 2-8. Like, again, it's a really tough start against, you know, a lot of teams that expect to be in the playoffs or right in the thick of it throughout the season. Some title contenders in there as well with, you know, Orlando, New York, OKC. Cleveland, certainly. And then it doesn't get easier. I mean, you're at Detroit. You're at Houston. That's probably another two losses. You get a breather when you come home against the Nets. But then the next night, you're at Minnesota and then have two more road games. So, like, it's going to be a really tough start to the season. Hopefully they don't get discouraged. Hopefully the young guys show something. And you got Middleton, you have McCollum there. You have guys that can help you. And you're certainly a better team than you were the last 2 years at the beginning of those rebuilding seasons. So it's a tough start, but I really do think that they should at least show a little something throughout that start. And then, you know, go in and show what they can do from there. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I could talk about the schedule for the whole day. I could actually, you know, go in and predict all 82 games, but I don't want to do that. And that's a pretty stupid exercise anyway. But that's going to wrap it up. Obviously we talked about Wall, you know, congrats to John on a great career, you know, retiring, like you said, on his own terms. So shout out to Tim for that. Eurobasket starts on the 28th for Team France. Bilal, Koulibaly, and Alex Sarr made the final 12-man team for France. Bilal looked great in that final game against Spain, led that comeback, led that 16-2 run, made a pair of threes, had a transition bucket, has started every game. Will probably start Eurobasket with Sarr coming off the bench. So look out for that. They begin that on the 28th of August, and it'll go through September. But again, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. It's been slow throughout the offseason. I don't want to just spam these episodes when nothing's going on. We actually had stuff with John retiring, with the schedule and all that, so wanted to get some out with the signings too. But again, I don't know when you'll see me or hear from me next. Probably when some newsworthy stuff happens. So again, wanted to get this out. But yeah, shout out to John for retiring. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And I'll be back at some point in the near future. So again, thanks for listening, guys. Have a good one. Go Wiz.